Bill, you're going to have to take a run and jump over to get back here. Yeah, okay. That's right. You got to take a run and get back that way. Good morning, everybody. My name is Mike Christman, Secretary for Resources, Chair of the Ocean Protection Council. I'd like to welcome you all here this morning, meeting of the Ocean Protection Council. We're going to, if I might, go a little bit out of order on the agenda. We're awaiting the arrival of our newest member, State Controller Steve Wesley. He'll be here momentarily. But to get started, you've all come a long ways, and we've got quite an agenda today. And what I'd like to do is move to the public comment part of our agenda, if I might. A very important part of this activity. But before I do, let me make a few opening remarks, and then we'll move to the public comment period. I think you all know that State Controller Steve Wesley is now the chair of the State Lands Commission, and as such, he becomes a member of the Ocean Protection Council and will be joining us a little bit later this morning. Alan Lloyd has a former Secretary for Resources here in California, is retired, and Cindy Tuck, the Assistant Secretary for Policy at Cal EPA, will be representing the agency today. Bill Craven, who is finding his way to the around the back of the dais, will be here representing Sheila Kuehl, and we understand that Assemblymember Nava will also be here today. I think if you've had a close look at the agenda, you'll see that we've got a full agenda today. Today we're going to have a presentation of the and discussion of our draft strategic plan for the Ocean Protection Council. Those of you who are involved in drafting the legislation and putting together the what this council is becoming will remember in that legislation it was very, very specific about the need for putting together a strategic plan, and we have begun that process or in the middle of it right now. We're also considering today three major action items. Consideration for the funding of a position of our executive policy officer here at the council or at the Ocean Protection Council. We work closely with the staffs of all the members of the Protection Council in this process and are now relatively close to making a final decision. We're going through some interviews and some background checks and some other things that you do during a normal things you do during a hiring process. And so we've got a ways to go, but we're confident we'll be making a hire soon. We'll also be considering a resolution of once through cooling for coastal power plants. If you've followed it, you've seen that the State Lands Commission just took an action on this issue at their meeting last Monday. And our council staff has proposed a resolution for the consideration of this council. If you were at the last meeting in Santa Barbara, there was quite a, during the public comment period and others, there was quite a discussion about this. So we'll be talking about that also later today. We're also going to be considering the consideration of the California Ocean Observing System Strategic Plan. Number of important action items today. I'd like to make a few opening comments on behalf of the governor. The governor has recently provided comments on the proposed five-year Outer Continental Shelf oil and gas leasing plan. I think as you know, the council has written two letters on this issue to members of Congress, and the governor has previously written to congressional representatives on this issue also. In his comments to the Secretary of Interior, the governor took a strong position against additional offshore leasing. He said in that letter, "I continue to believe that California reaps tremendous benefits from our ocean and coastal environments, and I'm unwilling to put the environment at risk for the sake of a new energy exploration in the outer continental shelf. For this reason, I strongly oppose any new oil and gas leasing off California's coastline and the efforts to weaken the right of California or other states to protect their coastlines from adverse impacts of offshore oil and gas drilling, and would ask that the proposed five-year plan continue the current OCS moratorium." This last week, just a couple of days ago, I had an opportunity to provide California's views, the Coastal States Organization, a national meeting sponsored by the Joint Subcommittee on Ocean Science and Technology. The topic of this, of course, was the National Ocean Research Plan that we're going to be involved with. The intent of this meeting was to help the federal government develop an ocean and coastal research needs plan. The focus of the comments that I made was to emphasize the coastal states require applied research support to help us solve many of our management problems. California's information research and outreach strategy adopted by the council last September continues to be cited as a national model for setting forth some of these research needs. Plans for the California and Rural Oceans Conference to be held September 17th and 20th later this year are moving forward and going to be in Long Beach. We have now raised over $170,000 in contribution from the sponsors and have an overwhelming response to our call for Sessions proposals. We have confirmed Admiral Jim Watkins, Leon Panetta, Congressman Farr, and world-renowned oceans explorers Jean-Michel Cousteau and Sylvia Earle as some of the as our plenary speakers at this event.
What'd you say? I'd just like to make one announcement after
you. Yeah, you bet. Go ahead.
I'm Brian Baird, Assistant Secretary for Ocean and Coastal Policy with the Resources Agency. I just wanted to mention one other announcement, that we have an organization called the California Ocean Communicators Alliance. And what this alliance is intended to do is to help implement one of the governor's actions in his action plan. And that action is to work with a group of people from NOAA and communications experts from throughout the state, NGOs and the private sector and so forth, to come out with a media campaign to reach the average citizen, to get this information to the average citizen on what the issues are with ocean and coastal management and how they can participate in that process. And next Friday in Monterey, there will be a meeting of this Communicators Alliance to really begin to put this campaign together. And the hope is that the campaign will actually be launched at the conference that Secretary Crisman just mentioned, California and the World Ocean 06, which will be held in Long Beach, California in September. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian. Any other announcements for the members? Okay, before we start on the public comment period this morning, I'd like to announce some important items. The bathrooms are outside, down the hall to the left, clear down at the far end. I'm also told down on the first floor there is a cafe for coffee and food that we can go get to if you need them. Also, please we're in a small meeting room. If you would please turn your cell phones off, you'd appreciate it. Okay, those of you who would like to speak as a part of the public comment period, please do so. If you would come on up, we'd like to make sure we have. Do we have any speaker cards at all on these public? You've got some. Okay. Why don't you go ahead and bring the speaker cards? If you get your speaker cards, bring them up to the front if you would, and we'll begin this. If you can. Okay. Does anybody have anything at all for the good of the order not associated with the agenda items this morning that they'd like to make as far as our public comment period this morning? Anything at all? I do from Raftican? Oh, so I do. Okay. Yeah, anybody else interested, please go ahead and fill out the comment card. Tom Raftican, United Anglers of California. Tom?
Good morning. Here from Raftican again, so thank you. I represent United Anglers of Southern California. We're the largest sport fishing group in California. We've got some 50,000 affiliated members. And the focus of the Ocean Protection Council is really better balanced management. It's not just fisheries management. It's ocean management. It's habitat management, water quality management. And we absolutely agree with the outlook. You know, we supported the council early on and continue to do so. We would like to see better integration of some of the systems that are out there. Case in point, there was a bottom trawl experimental fishery for spot prawns that was proposed for California. It went to the California Fish and Game Commission. It basically got on consent calendar there. We managed to get it off and take a closer look at it. And it was interesting, as it went along the line, they applied for a federal permit on it also. And later on in this process, just recently, the federal permit was rejected. It was kicked back. And one of the reasons for the rejecting of the federal permit was the fact that, it had not taken habitat considerations into account with this new fishery. There's existing gear that does a better job. But when it doesn't take habitat into consideration, it was moved off the federal agenda. And the thing is, it wasn't moved off the state agenda for that. We've got the Ocean Protection Council. It's clearly a move in the right direction. But when we have fisheries issues that are coming up, many types of fisheries gear are destructive to habitat and actually have severe water quality impacts. And I believe that before you put one of these in place, any type of a new fishery, it should be reviewed right here at the Ocean Protection Council. And we'd ask you to make a move in that direction.
Under what authority, Tom? Explain that the commission already does that in a public setting. What would we add to the conversation in the public dialogue?
I think state lands should have a review on that because these trawls would be disturbing the bottom of state lands. I think water quality clearly is an issue. We've done some work on bottom trawls with grab samples off Southern California, and from the work that we've got done, Dr. Dallas Weaver, it appears that if this was being conducted on land, an NPDES permit would be required within the first 4 minutes of operation of any bottom trawl in California. So what we have is we have issues here that are being pushed through because we're changing agendas. We're going to manage on an ecosystem basis and not simply on a fisheries management basis. And I think what it does is by bringing this to the council, you highlight this stuff before state lands and before the Environmental Protection Agency. These are issues that really should be dealt with there if we're going to make progress moving forward.
Okay. Good.
Thank you.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Okay. We've got... Once they're cooling. All right. Anybody else like to speak at the public comment period? Okay. We have a series of items we're going to consider today. We do not have a quorum, so we cannot take action on any of these items. We're going to take public comments. If we don't have a quorum, we'll just have to defer action until the next meeting. So I'm going to go ahead. We're going to go ahead and move forward. Next is a... action. You've read the minutes. Again, we can't act on those minutes. Item four on the agenda is a consideration of the funding for the position of the executive policy officer for the Ocean Protection Council. Who's gonna do this one?
I think that's gonna be Neil.
Neil. All right.
Neil. Oh. Okay.
Sorry. I'm Chris Blackburn.
Hi, Chris. Thank you.
Morning, Mr. Chairman and Council members. It is my pleasure to present to you this morning the staff recommendation calling for the funds needed to hire a new staff member for the Ocean Protection Council. Specifically, the recommendation calls for your approval of $350,000 that would fund the new position of Executive Policy Officer. The need for this position has been discussed amongst the staff and at previous OPC meetings, and it has been determined that additional executive-level staff is necessary in order to spearhead agency coordination, conduct policy analysis and budget analysis, and closely interact with the council members to form OPC policy positions. Attached to the recommendation is Exhibit 1, which is the job announcement for this position. It outlines the desired expertise as well as the required duties of the position. And just to quickly go over these, the executive policy officer would be the lead role for strategic planning. They would they would guide the finalization and the implementation of the strategic plan that we're going to be speaking about later today. They would also be the lead or point person for coordination with state agencies, departments, boards, and commissions, as well as state, local, regional, and federal organizations in order to develop efficient means to implement strategic goals of the council. They would be also in charge of setting funding priorities and creating cross-cutting budgets that would help achieve the goals and objectives laid out in that plan. And finally, they would be in charge of working with the legislature and Congress to examine existing laws and recommend any changes that are necessary to help protect our ocean resources. The executive policy officer would work closely with the OPC staff to implement and develop policies, initiatives, and projects that will be brought before this council in the future, and would also be expected to coordinate with the science advisor and science advisory team to make sure that the best available science is brought in to the formation of any OPC policies. The approval of the $350,000 would cover 2 years of the executive policy officer's salary plus benefits and expenses. And this position is being created as an exempt position within the resources agency. As I mentioned, Exhibit 1 is a job announcement. This announcement was released nationwide on March 1st of this year. And in anticipation of the approval of this recommendation, staff has already met with several potential and promising candidates. And just to wrap up, I'd like to point out that Exhibit 2 attached to the resolution is also three letters of support from the Ocean Conservancy, the NRDC, and the Center for the Future of the Ocean. This concludes my presentation. I think there may be some people to speak on behalf of it, but I'd be happy to answer any questions as well.
Anybody have any questions? Staff members, anything at all? Any questions about the staff report?
I do have one question about the way the motion is written, and I can either do that now or later.
Sure, right now.
Okay. It's just very minor, but I think it would avoid some confusion if we specified that the resolution authorized the Secretary for Resources to take these actions as opposed to some unnamed, unspecified secretary. Since we have two secretaries.
That's a very good idea.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Okay.
Oh, I'm told it's the secretary for the council.
Council.
Okay,
council secretary.
Then we ought to say that.
Okay.
That's a good idea. You okay with that, Sam?
Yeah.
All right.
Any other
questions or comments? Okay. Any public comments from the floor? Anything at all? We really appreciate the advice, letters of support, suggestions as we move through this process. I think all of you know that the work of the council, this is a very new entity. We think that this position is very important to have someone who is thinking about the council and the council's work 24/7, because we've all very small council, very very good active working relationship with the Coastal Conservancy and Coastal Conservancy staff. Neil Fishman and his folks are just doing an outstanding job. But to have someone as the kind of the coordinator of all of this on a daily basis is the reason for all of this. And again, as I said in my opening comments this morning, we are moving aggressively. The announcement's gone out. We've done the interviews. We're doing some reference checks now on some folks. So again, I think we'll all be pleased with the final selection. Anybody in the audience would like to make any comments about this? Okay. We'll defer action on this item, and we're going to move then now to item. I think we're going to move to the draft strategic plan. I'm sorry, a little bit out of order here, but again, most of you are here to talk about the once through cooling, and we need a quorum here, so. What I'd like to do is move to item number 6, the draft strategic plan. Item number 6 on the agenda. Who's going to do this?
I'm doing it.
Okay. Brian?
What we're doing today is providing you with our first draft of the strategic plan for the Ocean Protection Council. And I thought in providing a little background for this, I'd talk a little bit about the achievements of the council up to this point. And they are substantial. So far, the council has provided about $16 million of assistance for projects ranging from ecosystem management to fisheries management to watershed management to control of invasive species to eradication of derelict fishing gear. That's fishing gear that's been left on the ocean floor that's impacting ocean and coastal resources. We launched an effort to begin the mapping of offshore resources, offshore benthic resources for the entire 1,100 miles of state waters of our coastline. We've also are investing over $10 million in a specific water quality protection program. It's a very exciting beginning. As Secretary Chrisman mentioned, we have adopted, the Council has adopted an information research and outreach strategy to guide the specific scientific and outreach needs for ocean and coastal management. This document is being called by Admiral James Watkins, the head of the U.S. Ocean Commission, and Leon Panetta as a national model. I mean, and this is a very exciting thing, and it's a national model for coastal states, but really what they're saying is the federal government needs to step up to the plate and follow progressive states like California and produce this kind of document. So that's very, very exciting. Working with the California Biodiversity Council, we held the very first California Ocean Economic Summit. Economics is critical to how we deal with the ocean and coastal environment. And at that summit, we heard that in 2002, $43 billion were pumped into this California economy from ocean dependent industry. This council has taken important policy positions. This council has opposed new offshore oil and gas leasing and has twice written members of Congress on that issue. This council has taken a very strong position in supporting the Coastal Zone Management Act and defending that Coastal Zone Management Act from attacks that were forthcoming in the U.S. Congress. And today, this council is addressing the impacts of once-through cooling of coastal power plants, a very significant issue for the state of California. Also, this council has supported the key elements of the Governor's Ocean Action Plan, dealing with governance and economics and research and education and technology development and stewardship. However, the council has determined that we've gotten off to a really good, rapid, energetic start, but it's time to look to the future. It's time to look to the next year and the next 5 years and the next 10 years on what this council is going to achieve. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the development of the plan in general terms, and then Mr. Fishman from the Conservancy will talk about more of the specifics. The draft plan that you have before you today is based on extensive input from stakeholders. We went and talked to members from all levels of government, the NGO community, members of industry, private foundations, and the public. The mission that we have in this document is not new. It's something that has its roots in the 1997 ocean strategy called California's Ocean Resources and Agenda for the Future. But your staff modified that mission based on the comments that we received and the clarifications that we received at our various workshops. This plan before you describes how the council intends to improve ocean and coastal management in California through enhanced coordination at all levels of government, the private sector, research institutions, and non-governmental organizations. The key here is to define what the appropriate level of involvement is for this Ocean Protection Council. It's a high-level council. It's not here to duplicate what other agencies are doing. It's really here to make things work better, more effectively, and more efficiently. So some of the major elements of the plan. I'll just read the mission. The mission of the Ocean Protection Council, I should say draft mission, Ocean Protection Council is to employ integrated and innovative approaches to protect, manage, and restore California's ocean and coastal ecosystems, from the top of the coastal watersheds to the deep ocean, for their intrinsic value and for the benefit of current and future generations. So what this says is this council is here to protect the ocean and coastal environment for its very existence, for the fact that it should exist in a healthy state, but also that it's a real benefit for our citizens and for our economy. In terms of the legislative mandate, again, it talks about better coordination to improve effectiveness, better integration and use of scientific data, and to recommend changes in federal law and policy, and just how are we going to do all of this better. Key principles: the recognition of the interconnectedness of land and sea, supporting ecosystem health through ecosystem-based management, supporting things like the precautionary principle. We don't always have all the information that we need. Sometimes we have to take that extra step in order to protect the resources that need protecting, and also making the most effective use of public funds. Can we be more efficient in how we go about all of this? And can we more effectively involve the public? Now just a word on some of our tools that this comprehensive approach is going to employ. The first is to create a state agency steering committee to help set priorities on all aspects of implementation. And after all, this statute says let's coordinate better. Well, we better have a state agency committee to coordinate with to make that happen. And we don't have the specific entities yet identified, but you can rest assured it'll be our agencies within our coastal management program, the Department of Fish and Game, Parks and Recreation, Boating and Waterways, the water boards, and others. Science should be the foundation of good public policy. Often it's not. So we are moving forward to create a science advisory panel. That's happening. We're moving towards that right now, and we're also moving towards the hiring of a ocean science advisor in cooperation with the California Ocean Science Trust, which already exists. So we're looking at that science aspects of things. We are going to develop a regular approach to engaging the public in this process. So far, we're recommending that what we may do is have a public session with staff and potentially some council members the day before each Ocean Council meeting. And we may also take some other measures and have some other specific subject area workshops and so forth. And we're open to other suggestions. Finally, both the U.S. Commission and the Pew Oceans Commission talked a lot about regional ocean governance and how we need to look at the area necessary to approach certain issues that require a regional approach. We have a state with 1,100 miles of coastline. When we look at coastal sediment management, we are looking at that issue, if we look regionally, from each littoral cell where sand enters the system and exits the system. So nature is sort of defining what that regional approach ought to be, and we need to respond to that. Our Marine Life Protection Act, and I see representatives of both of these efforts out in the audience, by the way, is taking a regional approach, looking statewide at an overall framework and then focusing regionally. But the other exciting thing that we're doing is we are working with the states of California, Oregon, and Washington right now, with the governor's offices from Oregon and Washington, to pursue an agreement for how all three states would deal with issues, scientific issues off the California current, also topical and shared issues. For example, we all oppose offshore oil and gas, and we all ought to be talking about that together. We all have science needs. We are already talking about that together in terms of the sorts of science needs that we have. So that's the broad overview, the 20,000-foot level of what this plan is all about. And we have Mr. Neil Fishman from the Coastal Conservancy who's going to talk a little bit more specifically about the plan.
Neil, nice having you with us. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Brian. Mr. Chair, members of the Council, I'm Neil Fishman. I'm a Deputy Executive Officer at the Coastal Conservancy. Before I launch into some of the detail of this plan, I just wanted to acknowledge the work of Coastal Conservancy staff on this document, as well as Resources Agency staff, Brian, Leah Akins, Alice Chu, but also on our staff, Becky Pollock, Chris Blackburn, Marina Cazorla, Abe Doherty, Sheila Siemens, and also Mary Selkirk is with us from the Center for Collaborative Policy. That's been very helpful in framing the issues and development of a strategic plan and setting up the interviews with stakeholders. I wanted to actually start in the middle of this plan and direct you to page 22, which is potential roles for implementing actions. This is the not the what we want to see done, but more the how the OPC would help to get these things done. And I think it's important as we launch into a discussion of the specific actions that the council, as well as the general public and other stakeholders, understand that, as Brian said, there are a lot of issues on our plate, but we don't intend to take over those issues, only support other agencies in accomplishing them. Some will take a lead, some we won't. We're looking at coordination, collaboration, and integration. In some cases, we will take a lead role in the development and operation of advisory committees and in information sharing and coordination and integration of action, law and policy development, and public participation. In other places, we will simply support those types of committees, putting one of our staff members or a council member onto those processes. The same in science and education. In some cases, we will be the lead agency in developing a scientific council or looking at a particular problem. Often we are simply going to be participating and perhaps bringing funding forward. And then in funding in general for projects, we have had funding from a number of different sources.
Hi, Steve.
Morning. grants from the or appropriations from the legislature to the Resources Agency and through them to the Coastal Conservancy. Coastal Conservancy has put forward funding, as has the Water Board and other agencies. So in some cases, we will be doing direct funding of these issues. Then I'd like to direct you to page 7 of this plan and go into some of the specific items that we will be looking at. If you go actually before that, there are some general areas of interest, and these are then that have been distilled down from this longer list, but I think it's probably easier to understand the specific issues that we want to go through by looking at the longer list that's in, excuse me, it's on page 7. It is actually starting at page 14. The first section of issues we're looking at is ocean and coastal ecosystems. We would be looking to put forward ecosystem-based management approaches through development of model projects, as we've already done in the Morro Bay issue. We would be looking to support the Marine Life Protection Act. We have started to do that through our mapping efforts and may also be looking at doing monitoring approaches on that. We have identified invasive species, both prevention and eradication, as a key issue for the council. Enhancement of and restoration of intertidal and subtidal habitats. Completion and planning of restoration for we have identified 30,000 acres of coastal wetlands that we hope to be assisting on. Some of these projects are already underway, but we'll need federal funding, and we think the council can help bring that funding about. Restoring habitat connectivity and water quality within coastal watersheds. There are a number of major projects out there, removal of barriers to fish passage, some dam removal projects that the council has already put some funding into and should be working on in the next 5 years. Then achieving sustainable fisheries through implementation of the Marine Life Management Act, a key law in California. We think that the council can be helpful in getting the funding necessary through state government to implement that. And then we also want to look at the investigating and supporting innovative economic approaches for recovering fish stocks and fisheries. This is a fisheries capital pool and other fishery management approaches that use in market-based approaches to bring about a better market for fishing and more money coming into fishermen, but also less harm to the resource. We want to help the water boards reduce it or eliminate point and non-source pollution, water quality testing, sediment quality testing and benthic organisms, reducing or eliminating vessel pollution, reducing marine debris, planning for healthy beaches. We think that's another key issue that the council can be helpful on. And also, to some degree, addressing climate change. Not an easy one, but it's something that somebody needs to look at, and there are certainly issues associated with that, and there are increasing, as well as coastal hazards. We've looked at recent reports that there may actually be more tsunami hazards off the coast of California due to potential landsliding and other issues, so these are issues we should be looking at. Promoting sustainable economic activity. And then also balancing recreational use with ecosystem management, looking at ways to reduce or eliminate impacts to intertidal zones from public access, restoring urban waterfronts and tourism. That includes working on issues such as the California Coastal Trail, San Francisco Bay Trail, water trails, and also encouraging awareness and stewardship of the ocean, and improving understanding of coastal ocean and ocean and coastal ecosystems through research. We've already made significant contribution to the Sea Grant program. We hope to do more of that in the future. And a key one that we have been taking lead on is ocean observing systems. There are already many that are in place. We want to support those that are in place, but also develop continue to develop the regional associations that are working in the coastal current monitoring system. We've made a major investment of $21 million in an observing system. That's that needs to be expanded. It needs to be maintained. And that will be almost a one-of-a-kind in the country. And we've made a major investment in ocean mapping. We hope to complete ocean mapping of California waters within 5 years. And let's see, I'm almost done with these. And that's actually the end of that list. It's a long list. It's an ambitious list. We think that the council can be very helpful in working to get the funding for these, helping agencies with their budgets, doing cross-cutting budgets, and we hope that this will lead to additional funding for a whole range of agencies, and that the tide will rise a lot of boats here. And that's the end of this presentation, and I think we'll leave it open for your discussion of all of these issues, the general outline of the plan, and see if you have any comments.
Well, thank you. And again, thanks to you and the staff, the Conservancy, and our folks for all the good and hard work on this. This is strategic plans are difficult at best, particularly with an organization like the Protection Council. There's been a tremendous amount of public input into this process, I think, as all of you know. Many of you have been involved in it over time. We're gonna keep this open. Our goal is to go to adoption at our June meeting. But I encourage you to take a close look at the goals and priorities section in the strategic plan. There's a lot there. We're going to, as a part of that process, the challenge that we've got is, are we going to leave it there? Are we going to, on action of the council, are we going to adopt some priorities? Or over time, we're going to have to decide. The public input that we get today and the public input that we get over the next couple months on this will be very helpful as we move to a final adoption of this strategic plan. One thing I'm remiss for not doing before my comments, our new member of the Ocean Protection Council, Controller Steve Wesley, came in while we were going through this report. Steve, nice having you with us today.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Any comments you'd like to make before we begin to take public testimony on the strategic plan or anything else?
Let me just take one or two minutes before members of the public come forward. And first, I'm delighted to see so many people here and very eager to hear your feedback. I think at the top level, we need to all take a moment to reflect on how proud we should be that California has really taken leadership again, the first state in the country to really do something like this with an Oceans Protection Council. California has, I think, led the way in the environmental movement for the last century. We've done things like leading the way on catalytic converter legislation that people said was radical, unthinkable, yet within a decade, virtually every state in the country had followed suit. Within two decades, virtually every country in the world had followed California's lead. I think if you look back historically to what people like Teddy Roosevelt and John Muir did on the environment, they changed the history, indeed wrote a new chapter to the environmental movement. I think we have a chance to do that here on oceans protection. But I think we only do that if we seize the opportunity to be very, very clear on what the goals are, to set tough timetables for ourselves, to reach a little bit further than perhaps we'd ever be inclined to, and to get smart about finding the money necessary to move the ball forward. I know in efforts like this, everybody wants money for everything, and the challenge for us, whether it's in the private sector or the public sector, is to think through how we can get the most bang for the buck for the money we have, how we can move things forward most quickly, and how we can capture people's imagination to do something that perhaps hasn't been done for decades. I think we can do that here. I'm someone who's in a hurry, and I look forward to working with all of you to push the oceans agenda forward as quickly as possible. We have a responsibility to not only protect our oceans, but to restore them. They're sick. We need to stand up and do something, the likes of which I think hasn't been seen before, and I think we have a great opportunity before us. But thank you all for being here this morning.
Well said. Thank you very much. Appreciate that, Steve. And appreciate you being here with us today. if I might, we have we'll now go to public comment on the draft strategic plan. We have three individuals who asked to speak. Please, those of you who would like to speak and haven't submitted a speaker card, please do so and bring it up to the front, and we'll make sure to hear you. First to be heard is Linda Sheehan from the California Coastkeeper Alliance, followed by John Ugaritz from Fish and Game. Linda, good morning.
Morning, Chair Chrisman and members of the Council. My name is Linda Sheehan. I'm the Executive Director of the California Coastkeeper Alliance, and we represent waterkeepers from the Oregon border down to San Diego. I think that you have an incredible opportunity before you with this strategic plan. Not only are you leading the country with respect to ecosystem-based management for the ocean, but you're really leading the country with respect to ecosystem-based management in general. Nobody is really doing this effectively. When we passed 30 years ago or so all of the different environmental laws that we have before us, that took us a long way. But we've really come as far as we can go with those, just looking at water alone or looking at fish alone or looking at other resources alone. And what you're doing is actually trying to meld all those together. It's a difficult task, and that's why the strategic plan has needed the kind of public input that it's had, and we're grateful for the opportunity to provide public input on this. I think the danger that we've articulated, and then I think I see starting to be addressed in the strategic plan, is to simply make lists of things to do by substantive policy area, or lists of laws, lists of water laws, lists of fish laws, et cetera, rather than really integrate those. And I think that the new Appendix B, which I haven't had as much opportunity to review as I would have liked, but will certainly do so before the June meeting, that does start to get at the concern that we'd raised about moving beyond silo management into real ecosystem-based management. Mr. Raftikin talked earlier about the need for addressing fish issues and water quality. I think the Klamath salmon disaster is a perfect example of how we need to look at things across different substantive areas. And then also I think that we need to look more about how to recycle our money. We have a lot of opportunities for funding that we can use in many different areas. So I've raised before the issue of using some of the oil spill prevention and response money, which certainly should be used specifically for the Lemper-Keene directives, but also you can get a lot of added value for some of those projects, monitoring data, et cetera, that you could use for other issues as well. State Water Board has hundreds of millions of dollars in bond funds that it's expending right now. Again, better coordination, better understanding of where that money's going allows you to recycle some of it, reuse it a bit, a good theme for Earth Day. So I'll certainly be looking at this more closely, and we'll have additional comments for the June meeting, but I'm very pleased to see the movement with respect to Appendix B and talking about how we're going to use the individual authorities to create real ecosystem-based management in California. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Appreciate that. John Ugaritz, followed by Al Wenger.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Council members, my name is John Ugaritz. I'm the Nearshore Ecosystem Coordinator with California Department of Fish and Game's Marine Region. The department is very pleased to see this strategic plan and the Ocean Protection Council's efforts to detail how the council will move forward to improve ocean and coastal management in California. The first tool listed in the plan, creation of a state agency steering committee, will be an excellent step in helping coordinate activities and actions of the broad array of state agencies with ocean and coastal jurisdiction. Similarly, the proposed Science Advisory Committee will be a positive move towards coordinating science and monitoring issues statewide. The department would like to focus attention on a few key elements in the plan that give you some examples of how the Council's proposed actions may be implemented on the ground. With regards to coordination of state agencies, there are ongoing questions about the overlapping jurisdiction of a variety of agencies with respect to management of ocean resources. For example, in some cases, state water bottom leases were issued to the Department of Fish and Game by the State Lands Commission for marine protected areas. In other cases, these leases were not deemed necessary. The Council could help the agencies coordinate MPA implementation efforts and determine the best method to facilitate water bottom leasing if necessary. In the list of potential actions found in Appendix A, the department is pleased to see many items that will help us do our job. Supporting the full implementation of the Marine Life Protection Act with a specific reference to providing resources necessary to enforce marine protected areas will be critical for the department's ability to fill this legislated mandate. Additionally, support for adequate monitoring and research will ensure that marine protected areas are adaptively managed based on their usefulness and performance. With regards to sustainable fisheries, the department sees many ways the activities listed in your five-year plan will help. Support for full implementation of the Marine Life Management Act, particularly in form of new staff and funds to complete stock assessments and management plans, is essential. The concept of market-based approaches to sustainable management is one that the department would like to actively pursue. An example of a way to implement this strategy is the work the department has already begun with regards to a potential abalone fishery at San Miguel Island. The department has already begun work on this potential activity and sees a novel approach to a market-based fishery management scheme that could help not only fund resource management and enforcement, but also ensure the economic sustainability of a small-scale fishery. The council could support this effort by funding research and monitoring efforts that are already partially funded by commercial fishery contributions. The department needs this support for research and development of new approaches to sustainable fishery management. With regards to your proposed outreach and education strategies, the council could both support and coordinate a uniform signage program for state marine protected areas. This would go hand in hand with other support for implementation of the Marine Life Protection Act by increasing public awareness of marine protected areas and their regulations. Uniform signage would greatly improve the public's ability to understand and comply with marine protected area regulations. Finally, the department is extremely supportive of actions that will help coordinate and expand on programs such as the Partnership for Interdisciplinary Study of Coastal Oceans and the Cooperative Resource Assessment of Nearshore Ecosystems, the PSCO and Crane Monitoring Programs. These programs will be critical to the department's ability to actively and adaptively manage nearshore resources. These are just a few examples of the ways the Council can implement its strategies and continue to support the Department's efforts to sustainably manage the state's living marine resources. We look forward to working closely with the Council as it moves forward in its role of coordination of ocean and coastal management. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Thank you for coming today. I'd like to call Al Inger from the Coastal Commission, followed by Bill Duros. Al?
Good morning, Chair Christman and members of the Council. I appreciate the opportunity to provide a few remarks. I also want to let you know that I have a letter from the Commission staff with comments on the strategic plan, and I'll provide that to your staff after I make these brief remarks. I want to commend you on and the staff on a creation of a rather ambitious plan. I echo some of the comments that the previous speakers made about some of the important aspects of that with the development of a steering committee to work on interagency coordination and opportunities there would allow us to really make use of some of the really strong regulatory tools that are available for the state in creating a comprehensive management strategy and approach for improving coastal and ocean resource protection. I want to really focus on just a couple of things. I think the plan has laid out a really excellent approach and strategy for investment and coordination on the marine resource side. I want to commend you on that. I think what the plan could really do is create a similar investment and coordination strategy for the land management side. Really, how do we address the land-sea connection? That's really part of this. There's a lot of mention of activities related to support for the Non-Point Source Pollution Control Plan. Very important, supporting local governments, improving land use decisions and other things, the importance of watershed-based approaches and ecosystem management. What's really lacking, though, for the state is a comprehensive strategy, kind of a framework for really how to pull this together in a way that addresses the multiple objectives that are outlined here in the plan, related from ecosystem-based management to floodplain management, to sediment assessment and control management. And I think an approach that I would offer for your consideration is to begin to develop a strategy framework for assessing land use, managing land use on a watershed scale throughout coastal watersheds in California. At the heart of that is really a natural resource-based assessment, looking at the resources and cultural resources in each of the watersheds, helping local governments then implement those, incorporate those into their land use plans, because land use plans really control at the local level what's happening. How we use the land affects the water, that affects the resources, and then, you know, whether it's degradation of water, we're seeing degradation of resources. So improvement of land management and land use and decision-making is really at the core of what we could do for a long-term investment in terms of improving coastal water quality and coastal protection. So a natural resource-based planning approach would get us at that fundamental piece. The council is uniquely positioned to do this.
Are counties doing that now, Al, along the coast?
Not comprehensively. There's pieces of that happening. There's some local jurisdictions that are doing that. We're trying to work with the local jurisdictions on their local coastal plans on that. But statewide, across the board, there's not approach, nor is there really an assessment framework, nor some support tools and outreach to help local governments really make that connection and see how they can incorporate that into their land use planning. There are some nascent efforts. There was a state water board funded a project with the local government commission to do outreach to elected officials, educate them on the land water connection and things that they can do. There's a concurrent effort with a partnership we're involved with called the California Water and Land Use Partnership that's trying to provide the follow-up resources and training and techniques and tools for planners, builders, local officials to then make those changes so that where new development comes forward, it's being placed in the appropriate places in the watershed. The important features of the watershed, like recharge areas, wetlands, riparian areas, are protected in the context of an overall plan. Development is still occurring as it should using low-impact development techniques, but in the appropriate areas of the watershed itself. We think that this offers a strategy then to improve land use and then kind of improve water quality and resource planning. So I think we would like to work with the council, and I'd offer to be the liaison to these efforts that we're involved with to help develop really a comprehensive strategy, an investment strategy here to provide the tools and outreach, information, and resources for counties and local governments and others to really develop this framework, implement it, and include it in their local coastal plans and general plans throughout coastal watersheds. We think this would have a tremendous impact. Could be a legacy that would really move us, you know, for the council to really make an investment in how we move forward in the future. I'll just close with that, and again, thank you for the opportunity. We look forward to continuing to work with you in the future, and especially on the steering committee and other aspects of the plan as you've outlined. So thank you.
Al, can I ask to make sure that, again, we're moving, hopefully, to get this adopted in June. We're rolling it out for the first time. Of course, it's been public for quite a period of time. Please get those comments into us and work with us on it. I mean, you've got some good ideas and there we'd like to take advantage of.
I saw that they were partially reflected in
right.
the strategic plan itself, and we'd had some conversations with your staff before.
Great. About Please do so. Thank you. Appreciate that very much. Bill Duros, followed by Warner Chabot. Bill?
Mr. Secretary, members of the Commission, good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to provide you some comments today on the strategic plan. I'm here as the West Coast Regional Superintendent for the National Marine Sanctuary Program. We are overall supportive of the strategic plan. We think it's got a number of very good elements in it, and it reflects, in fact, the goals of not duplicating efforts of other agencies, of making things happen more effectively. These are laudable goals, the right set of goals, and we think you guys are on the right target with that. The OSHA Protection Council has already been very effective. Brian laid out some of those examples today, as did Neil. I commend you for that. In particular, the council's ability to spend money quickly, not agonizing over some of the details, making sure you're focused on the right priorities, trying to seed new approaches to management. This is something that is highly needed in government today, yet it's very rare. And I work for the federal government, and certainly I know what it's like to see agonizing over details about how to spend money. And you guys this council has really made a big improvement there, I think even showing examples for other state agencies. So I commend you for that. In terms of the strategic plan, some of the Components of that, the State Agency Steering Committee, we strongly support that. That's a very good step on your part. Engaging the public on a regular basis. National Marine Sanctuaries are constantly involved in public engagement, and I think that would be a great step as well to keep this plan fresh, to keep the ideas flowing, and make sure the public understands what the council's interested in. We also support regional approaches to management, and strongly concur with the overall goal of providing more resources to the Department of Fish and Game, in particular the Marine Region, and in particular to help them implement the Marine Life Protection Act. That's an agency that we work with regularly, have a very good partnership with them, and they we can certainly attest to the fact that they could use those additional resources and would spend them well. Several ideas for things to include in the final plan. A little background, the National Marine Sanctuary Program has 13 sites around the country. Four of those are in California. Three of those are in state waters and protect something like a third, approximately a third of the state waters are in National Marine Sanctuaries. We have had for over 20 years a very effective collaboration with the state in an informal way in terms of managing resources. Different state agencies like the Coastal Commission, State Parks and Recreation, Department of Fish and Game, State Lands Commission. We've worked with for many, many years, and each of these sanctuaries, in effect, are mini models for ecosystem-based management. We have been revising management plans for each of those sanctuaries now for about 5 years. We're sort of on the other end of moving things quickly, but they are very, these plans are very well linked to the public. We know what the public's issues are. We've been involving the public and stakeholders in these processes all along. These management plans for all four sanctuaries are going to be released in the spring and the summer of this year. And I would ask for and encourage the Ocean Protection Council itself, perhaps a briefing to the council on what those plans are all about would be in order. Certainly, the various state agencies we've been working with, and they will know about this, but the Ocean Protection Council itself, maybe this new executive director could spend some time digging into these plans, because what they represent are very specific activities and actions that are necessary in this roughly one-third of your state that's also protected with a National Marine Sanctuary overlay. And so there are some real specific details on some of the things that are in here in general, such as water quality and watershed protection, the importance of halting beach closures and turning that around so that we no longer see beaches closed due to coliform or other biological contamination, invasive species, coastal mapping, coastal ocean observing systems, and ecosystem monitoring. Those are some of the elements that are in all of these plans that are also in general in your documents. And so I think that's a really a detailed way for you to see what are some site-specific examples across the state that that need additional attention. Linked to this is something that I would propose be added in some fashion. And maybe it's in here and I've just missed it, but in that the goal exists both in these national ocean studies and in your own ocean plan to better connect state and federal governments and state and federal agencies. I would suggest we have maybe an annual state and federal agency summit. Maybe your state steering committee and the half dozen or so state agencies that are located here in California that are working on coastal and ocean issues in California, such as the National Marine Sanctuary, some of the national parks, EPA, for instance, would get together and we'd have a dialogue among peers about what are maybe some steps the federal government can be doing, what are some steps the state government can be doing to better connect with each other. I'd be certainly happy to have my office, in our new regional office, help you set that up. But I think that'd be an effective way to create that dialogue that we all talk about, and it happens haphazardly. Yeah. There's certainly interest. I know there's no one who doesn't want to do better collaboration. I think how we do that, that might be a mechanism that's worth exploring. The third suggestion is performance measures. I know are discussed to some degree and are somewhat in here. We've been really getting deep into performance measures in our own way to understand, are we really being effective in protecting these National Marine Sanctuaries? And that might be something that I would suggest needs a little more attention. It might be good to see that for your priority goals. They don't have to be five performance measures for every priority, maybe one for the most important ones, or two for the most important ones would be good, so that 5 years from now, if you're looking at this then, you could see how have we done, if you veered off course, why has that happened? And then the last thing I want to alert you to is this issue on regional governance, and I think there's a number of good steps that are in here and underway, this tri-state approach. We strongly support that activity. The National Marine Sanctuary Program, as you can imagine, is very interested in regional ocean governance, and in that we now have a West Coast regional office looking across the three states plus Alaska. We are working with some other federal agencies to develop an inventory, if you will, of what are the aspects and the components of the ecosystem. What are the areas that have been mapped? What are the areas that haven't been mapped across the broad ecosystem, right? These three state areas, not just state by state or even sub-region by sub-region. What are some of the socioeconomic constraints? What are the heavy use areas? What are the areas that aren't heavily used? To get, in essence, what we're calling a West Coast pilot project together of ecosystem-based management, for it to really work, you sort of need to have a sense of what's there. And I think we're certainly readily able to admit we don't really know exactly what's there in these ecosystems. And since it's a multi-year process, no matter what, monitoring across a broad regional ecosystem, for instance, needs to take place, knowing what we've got and what is being monitored in advance of then starting out a new monitoring program seems like an effective step. So you'll be hearing more about that. We'll be inviting you to help us with this effort across these states as well as the other states in California, Oregon, and Washington. So with that, I thank you again. I commend you for your work so far, and the strategic plan is a great step forward.
Bill, thank you. Be sure and get those comments to us in writing to make sure we get them incorporated. Any other follow-up you have.
Great.
So
thank you.
Really appreciate your being here today. Warner Chabot.
Morning. Warner Chabot with the Ocean Conservancy. I want to agree with Chairman Chrisman that doing a strategic plan for issues as complex as this can be very difficult. I also want to compliment the chairman and the staff with the both your staff and the Coastal Conservancy staff for, I think, conducting an extraordinarily open and transparent process for trying to develop this draft plan. I also want to agree with Controller Wesley, and I think he's correct about California's past leadership on ocean policy. I appreciate his reference to Teddy Roosevelt. Mr. Roosevelt was truly an environmental visionary. He identified public trust resources on the land and the need to restore, protect, and set aside key ecological resources for future generations. His ideas led to the creation of national parks, refuges, national forests, and wilderness areas. Those ideas were considered radical at the time. They were opposed by resource users at the time. 100 years later, they're seen as one of the best ideas that America delivered to the rest of the planet. I think that California can do for the oceans what Teddy Roosevelt did for the land. Regarding the strategic plan, I think your strategic plan is the roadmap for defining and directing just how clear and bold that California vision will be. I'd like to make two specific suggestions. One, on Section 3, the goals and priorities, I would urge you to try to move that section up even further to the front of the document because it is truly the heart and soul and guts of your vision. Second, I would urge you to direct staff to take one more admittedly difficult but bold step in the draft plan. I would ask that you please try to set specific, quantifiable, measurable results that you hope to achieve at the end of 5 years for each of the major goals and priorities in Section 3. It won't be easy to do, but I think without some specific and tangible, measurable goals, it will be hard to track if we're making progress towards the goals that you're trying to ultimately reach in 5 years. And the NGO community is clearly willing and willing to work with your staff in trying to do that, but we need your leadership to direct staff to make that one additional product at the end that comes back for you in the plan that you will approve in June. Thank you.
Warner, I couldn't agree more. I think that a strategic plan is just that. It's got to be a dynamic document. It's got to be reflective of our guiding principles, goals, objectives, and all that's in it. But it's also got to have some performance measures. I couldn't agree more. I've heard it said a number of times, and I'd be interested as a part of this ongoing public dialogue with respect to this plan, what some of those might be. We have ideas, but again, we're going to have to bring them together and to articulate them, I think, in the plan. We've had one additional request for speaker on this item, Michael Sutton from the Monterey Bay Aquarium. Mike?
Morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the council.
Morning.
Thank you for being here today. I just wanted to agree with the comments of previous speakers about the strategic plan. I think it's a terrific first draft, and the staff's to be commended for that. I have two suggestions, though, for the next draft, based on having been through a similar process myself just recently. It does seem to me that the word strategic is all about making tough choices, and any strategic plan ought to really start with a very clear articulation of a vision of what the council is trying to accomplish. That will guide all of the subsequent activities and priorities. The second thing I would suggest is that the current draft reads a bit like a smorgasbord. It's got everything in there that needs to be done on the coast and the nearshore ocean. And while that's important, it's also important, it seems to me, to have a better sense of priorities. Because, as I mentioned last time before the council, the biggest danger of any grant-making program, including the Ocean Protection Trust Fund, is dissipation of effort and funds on individually meritorious projects that don't add up to much of anything. So it strikes me the plan would be much stronger if it had a better articulation of the vision up front and a sense of priority among all of the different activities and projects and programs that are listed in it. I think it would be far better, and it would give you better direction on how to spend both your effort and your money down the line. We're obviously not going to have unlimited resources for the Ocean Protection Trust Fund, and I think it would be better if you had a sense of priority in this plan that gave you some clear direction on how to spend those funds. One more thing, Mr. Chairman. I would be happy to provide an update on our efforts to shape a regional agreement on oceans among the three West Coast states at the appropriate time in this meeting, if you wish.
I like that. Very good. Very good suggestion, Mike. Couldn't agree more. Mr. Wesley?
Great. I really want to emphasize what and support what Mr. Chabot and what Mr. Sutton said. What I think we have here is a terrific overview. It may be too terrific because, in fact, I think we've captured most everything here. It does feel a little bit to me like a smorgasbord as well. That's fine. But I think the test of our success is going to be, can we identify those priorities? And can we stand up after not just 5 years, but 1 or 2 years and say we're making concrete progress toward those goals? For example, I'm a huge believer in mapping what is occurring off our coast. Unless we can actually measure what's happening, it's going to be hard for us to fix it. Let's say how much we're going to map. Let's say when we'll have it mapped by. Let's talk about what we're likely to do once we've done that. I think this issue of what are the priorities, what are the timetables, and then ultimately the real test of government is what resources do we put behind them and what do we expect to stand up and say we've actually accomplished after a certain period of time. That will be the test of how well we have succeeded or not, and it's something I'd like to commit my staff to work with the staff of the commission on to make this a little more concrete, provide a little more clarity on what we're going to commit to do. I think if we do that, we have the opportunity to, again, not only capture people's imagination, but truly move the ball forward. And I think doing anything less would be a huge lost opportunity.
I couldn't agree more, and I think our biggest challenge is I personally agree with the comments I heard from many of the speakers. I mean, it is a smorgasbord. I mean, that's how you begin this process. I mean, clearly we want to make sure that we include it all. Now our challenge, you know, really is as we look at this smorgasbord to prioritize, as many of you said, because there's an awful lot in here. I mean, you can almost, in a plan like this, if you're not careful, if you have way too much and don't articulate it well enough, don't put the vision, don't put a clear vision in there as kind of the that leads into the guiding principles, it's you're going to get lost in the process. And so from my perspective as a member of this council, again, as I said many times, strategic plan documents are dynamic documents, will change over time. I mean, I quite frankly think on a yearly basis we need to take a look at the documents, take a look at our measurables, and see how we're doing. Because this is such a dynamic system, such a dynamic state, changing all the time. And if we're looking at the kind of adaptive management processes that we're going to be, they're going to have to naturally be a part of what we do here. We're going to have to regularly assess how we're doing and make mid-course corrections along the way to make sure we're successful in this process. And so I encourage you to, each and every one of you who've been a part of this, to work with us on the council as we move towards the June meeting to adopt this strategic plan. This is one of the most important activities that we're going to undertake in this council over the next few years. So we really need your help on that. You've been helpful. We appreciate the comments today, and those of you who've been here today that have provided those comments verbally, make sure you get them to us in writing, and we'll be reporting on this regularly. So any other comments or suggestions from anybody? Bill, you've been awful quiet down there. Why are you down there so far? Why don't you?
That's what my name tag was.
Oh, I see. That's right. Okay, I get it.
No, I want to thank the staff for working on this. I completely agree with the, I thought, very thoughtful and intelligent comments of the people who spoke. You know, it seems to me that the underlying theme for all of these remarks, both from state agencies and the nonprofits, is how anxious they are for the Ocean Protection Council to succeed. I think the stakes are incredibly high. This effort to coordinate ocean-related activities is incredibly important. And the other thing is, you know, I haven't spent as much time on this draft as I should have, and I confess to that. But I look at it, and I see that we should make the language in Section 3 and in the appendixes. We should perhaps restate some of those objectives in ways that we can measure our success, and actually say when some of those activities that are especially in the appendices are going to occur. In other words, I think the public and the state agencies that are involved in this effort want to know a little bit more specific information about when these activities are going to be undertaken. But that said, I think this is a heck of a beginning and reflects a great deal of work, and the people who were involved in it should be commended.
Okay. Mr. Wesley?
Just one other comment. I would very much, and I think you've heard many of us saying the same thing, which is help us focus, give us some specifics on concrete tangibles. What are some of the things you think we can do where we can make the taxpayers' dollar go the furthest and do the things that will most move a solid environmental agenda further? Which things will help us protect the oceans? If you could help us with those specific ideas, thoughts, challenges, but put it in concrete terms, that would be extremely helpful to us.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. We've got, there is no action on this particular item. Again, as I said earlier, we are going to be moving towards hopefully adopting the strategic plan in June. Excellent comments. Please provide them to us in writing. We'll be having further comments as we move through the process. Now what I'd like to do is move back up in the agenda. We had an item before the controller came. We had an item that the consideration of the funding for the position of the Executive Policy Officer for the California Ocean Protection Council. The resolution itself is actually on a website. It's a resolution that says that what we'd like to do is we'd like an authorization to the council to fund an executive policy officer position for the Ocean Protection Council for ocean conservation, authorizes secretary of the council to take necessary actions to provide the $350,000 for implementation.
As amended.
Thank you. That's right. As amended, Secretary of the Council. We want to make sure it's not me. It's Sam. Okay. All right, Sam. Okay.
I'd like to move that we authorize the spending necessary for the hiring of the Executive Policy Officer as amended.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Wesley. I will second that. Being as there's only two of us, I guess that's the vote. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. All right. All right, next item on the agenda then.
Mr. Secretary, would
yes.
you mind, while we have a quorum, approving the minutes to the meeting?
Oh, thank you very much. Are you okay with that?
I'd like to move approval of the minutes.
Thank you, Sam. Appreciate it. Second. Consider it done. Thank you.
All right. Anything else? No? I guess that's it. All right. Let's move then to the consideration of the resolution on once-through cooling for coastal power plants. I think Neil Fishman with the Coastal Conservancy staff is going to make the staff report on this. Again, we have a number of you who have requested time to speak on this item. If you have not turned in a speaker card, please do so. Neil?
Good morning again. I'm going to try and be brief on this because I know a lot of people do want to speak. This is the third time that this council will have heard this issue. The first, we had just a brief report from the staff of the Energy Commission and the water boards. Then your staff brought a briefing paper in which we framed the issues related to once-through cooling without bringing you any particular opinion or resolution. At that time, the council requested that we bring back a resolution on once-through cooling, and that's what you have before you today. I'd like to also, before I launch into this, just to thank John Gurish, who is our attorney, who worked on this, and Dr. Chris Blackburn, who you heard earlier, who wrote these documents, and I think they've done a great job. I also thank the staffs of the Water Board and the Energy Commission who have helped supply us with materials on these, their staff reports, and have been just great to bounce ideas off of and talk to about these issues. The resolution before you is pretty simple. It refers to the US EPA rulings on once-through cooling and relative to the 316B rule, which requires reductions in entrainment and impingement at existing coastal power plants. And this resolution encourages the state agencies that regulate these issues to implement the most protective controls on once-through cooling. This is in recognition of the EPA findings on once-through cooling that there are numerous impacts from this technology, but also recognizing that the power plants in question are critical parts of the state's power grid. Both in some are baseload plants and some are peak load plants, but they are critical to the state's energy supply at this time. The resolution resolves to assist the state board with the formation of a technical group to provide the expertise needed to look at these issues in the regulatory process. It resolves to establish an interagency coordinating committee comprised of the Water Boards, Energy Commission, Public Utilities Commission, and Coastal Commission, and other agencies to integrate actions and coordinate regulatory authorities. Since this issue became or came before the OPC, we have had a couple of meetings with different agencies. I think those meetings have been helpful to bring the issue to the forefront. It would further resolve that the OPC sponsor a six-month study in conjunction with the Energy Commission to analyze existing coastal power plants and determine each plant's technical feasibility for conversion to alternative cooling systems or installation of best technology and the associated costs and impacts from those technologies. And it further resolves to work with the Water Boards, Energy Commission, and PUC, and Coastal Commission to investigate possible non-regulatory incentives that can accelerate desirable conversions of once-through cooling technologies in addition to the current system. Looking to find ways to accelerate the conversion and reduction of the impacts of these plants. I'm going to leave it at that, and I know that the members of the council are understand this issue. I think there are a number of people in the audience who will give a lot of detail and different points of view, but I'd be happy to answer questions, or Dr. Blackburn or John Gurish would also be happy to answer your questions.
Questions or comments from anybody up here before we open it for public comment? Okay. Great. Thank you, Neil. Appreciate it. Good work. Again, we have a number of folks who have asked to speak on this item. I'd ask you if you would obviously your comments are really important to us. Brevity would be helpful through the process because we've got a number of you who are going to be speaking. So please take that in mind as you move through your comments today.
I'd like to ask Al Wenger from the California Coastal Commission to come up first, followed by Audra Hartman.
Thank you, Chairman Christman. Again, I'm Al Wenger with the Coastal Commission, Deputy Director for Energy, Ocean Resources, and Water Quality Division. I want to commend the staff for the creation of this resolution. We think it goes a long way towards making a positive statement about the issues related to once-through cooling. I just want to offer one suggested revision or clarification. And suggest that the resolution be revised to set a clear direction that it's the goal of the state to replace once-through cooling with less environmentally damaging alternatives where this is determined to be feasible, at all the locations where it's determined to be feasible. So as a result of the study that's being proposed to be done, at those locations where once-through cooling should be phased out, then it would be helpful to have a clear goal statement here that it's the goal of the state to go forward and do that, to work with regulatory and non-regulatory incentives to make that happen. So that's my one recommendation, and I'll email that to Sam and John and Neil as well. Thank you.
Okay, Al. Thank you. Audra Hartman, followed by Rhett Millsap. Audra?
Good morning. My name is Audra Hartman. I'm here for Duke Energy, and really wanted to thank you for the opportunity to speak. The resolution came out this week, so we haven't had time to do a thorough analysis of it, but our initial comments are concerning the six-month study of possible alternatives to once-through cooling. We have facilities on the coast that have recently or will be undergoing studies either at the Energy Commission, through the permitting process, or through the MPDES process, extensive scientific review of once-through cooling and alternatives. Excuse me, allergies. We are worried that the six-month study isn't long enough or won't go into a comprehensive review of everything that's gone on in the past and will be happening in the future, that it will only do a very shallow review of statistics at the plant and not look at the way the plant is operating, potentially new facilities that are going to be going in there, new footprints, and will not take into consideration local government's concerns, the plant operation, and all the factors surrounding it. And so what we're advocating is that if you do this six-month study, that you look at some of the other things that have been done by the Energy Commission in their permitting process, examples of our plants that are recently permitted, or things that will be happening at the regional water quality control boards.
Yeah, we will certainly be doing that. I mean, that we'll have to do that given the fact that, I mean, if it isn't 6 months, what would you suggest? I mean, is it more about being afraid that not enough would be included because of the short time frame? Is that what it is?
Well, what our concern is that you'll be starting a brand new process and not taking permitting that's been done at the Energy Commission extensive review that has gone on there.
No. We couldn't do that. We can't start all over in this. I mean, there's an awful lot of work that's gone on, and so it's a matter of getting the work together and deciding the best approach.
Just to recap, our facilities on the coast have either gone through in the last 2 years permitting processes, will be going through. We'll be sending a new application for a facility in the next few months.
Okay, great, Audra. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate your coming. Rhett Millsap, followed by Ben Rottenburn. I think I have that right.
Good morning, council members. Thank you for having us here today. I'm Rhett Millsaps with the Stanford Environmental Law Clinic, and we've been involved in these issues through various cases that we've been involved in around the state, as well as through other agency hearings this year on the issue. We very much support this resolution. We hope that you'll adopt it, along with the amendments that are before you. And I just want to take a brief moment to talk about one of the revisions that we think is very important. In the first resolve in the resolution, where you resolve to support the Section 316B rule requiring reductions, we would advocate that you go further than this and not only implement 316, but the Clean Water Act also gives states authority to go ahead and set more stringent regulations. As Controller Wesley so eloquently pointed out, California has long been a pioneer in environmental regulations for the country. Right now, on this issue, though, New York is the pioneer. The state of New York has taken a strict approach to regulation of once-through cooling technologies. New York has outlined stringent data collection standards for existing facility permittees, requiring permittees to conduct rigorous studies to document impacts on aquatic organisms where the state determines that previous studies are inadequate. New York also requires a reduction of impingement and entrainment in the upper ranges set by EPA's Phase 2 rules, and the state does not consider restoration plans as an acceptable best technology available alternative for any facility, nor does the state of New York allow for site-specific, cost-based, best technology available determinations. Now, why does this matter for California? Of course, California has the largest ocean economy in the U.S., making up 19% of the national ocean economy as of the year 2000. It's the fastest-growing coastal economic sector in tourism and recreation, making the protection and enhancement of coastal resources of paramount importance. Also, as of 2000, 77% of California's population lived in coastal counties, which represent just 25% of the land. So given all of this, we think it's very important that California take a very strong position on once-through cooling technology to protect the coastal health of California. Now, California state law has set a mandate for this, we believe, going back to the California Coastal Act, which has some very specific language that authorizes agencies like this to take a strong position here. Coastal Act Section 30230 imposes an unqualified requirement to use the coastal environment in a way that sustains ecological health above all else. It says, quote, marine resources shall be maintained, enhanced, and where feasible, restored. Uses of the marine environment shall be carried out in a manner that will sustain the biological productivity of coastal waters and that will maintain healthy populations of all species of marine organisms adequate for long-term commercial, recreational, scientific, and educational purposes. Now, there's no reason that we should be subsidizing power plants on the coast that use once-through cooling technology when they're doing a perfectly good job of providing power using other technologies in inland plants where they don't have that free ocean water available to them. Also, of course, California has the Marine Life Protection Act. In addition to the most recently passed California Ocean Protection Act. Given this broad framework that California has created, we don't think it would make sense for this body to take a weak position on this issue. Since the Ocean Protection Council was formed to primarily protect the coast and restore the health of the coast, we think that this body should take a very strong position on once-through cooling, and we hope that you'll adopt the resolution with the revisions that are proposed before you in order to tighten that up, because there will be people on the other side who will use the language in the resolution to try to fudge here and there and to try to weaken what your intention is if you don't seriously consider these language issues in the resolution before you.
You've submitted that suggested language to us?
We did. It should be with your staff.
I think so. Nobody seems to see it, so you better get to us, okay?
We'll make sure that it does.
Thanks. Thank you.
So we, the staff, Sam, we don't have those?
We have written comments for some of the people who are going to testify, but not all of them. So
okay,
this may be in what we're handing out right now.
Okay, thank you. All right, Rhett, thank you. Ben Rottenburn, followed by Kaya Freeman.
Good morning. My name is Ben Rottenburn, and I'm also with the Stanford Law School Environmental Law Clinic. As Rhett just mentioned, I'd like to start out by saying that I'm thrilled that the council is considering passing this resolution today. My testimony is only designed to suggest ways to strengthen the resolution to more accurately reflect the council's goals of ocean protection. And Chairman Crisman, you've asked for specifics in ways that we would like to see the resolution changed, and my suggestions have to do with the fourth resolved, the six-month study. I have three basic suggestions here, and the first one is sort of a small one, which would be to cut out the language of technical feasibility of conversion to alternative cooling technologies, because I believe that that may be used by power plants to demonstrate that no cooling alternative would be possible. However, there are very few scenarios.
And replace it with what?
Excuse me?
Cut it out and replace it with something, or just cut it out?
Just leave that.
Leave that out.
Leave that out.
Okay.
Of the study, because I believe that Other cooling technologies may, in some circumstances, be more expensive than ones through cooling, but technically and feasibly, very rarely. More importantly, I'd like to ask you to cut out the associated costs language. The main reason for this is that not only do California laws require the state of California and power plants to minimize the intake of mortality of marine life without respect to associated economic costs, but thus far, our experience has suggested that the cost figures that you would get are all in the hands of power plants that can change the cost figures at various times to serve changing goals. Consider the Stanford Clinic's experience at Moss Landing, where the company's own estimates of once through cooling relative to other forms of cooling changed by $20 million over 4 years. I'm not saying which figure was better, and I don't have time to get into why they might have changed the figures, but it couldn't have been two different figures. As a second matter, at Moss Landing, the company established a restoration fund to justify the use of once through cooling. On the benefit side, the company valued the land in the restoration plan at only $18,000 an acre, when the minimum valuation of the land in the administrative record was $60,000 an acre. Now, if the company had valued the land at that $60,000 an acre, it would have shown that the cost of once through cooling plus the cost of the restoration plan, an adequate restoration plan, was actually more expensive than once through cooling alternatives. So my only point here is that thus far all the information about costs has come from power plants with no incentive to change the status quo. If the council does want to study site-specific cost in its study, it must ensure that the cost numbers it gets are very accurate. But my main point is that I would discourage such analysis altogether because getting such accurate cost figures is extremely difficult. And as a final point, I'd like to discourage excessive analysis of the environmental impacts of alternative technologies for the simple reason that EPA has already considered alternative cooling technologies' impacts in promulgating its Section 316B rule, and Congress has already considered them in passing Section 316B, and in both cases, the government decided that the impacts of alternative cooling technologies were far less than the impacts of ones through cooling. Make no mistake, any cooling technology is going to have impacts, but ones through cooling, I assure you, is the cooling technology with the most impacts. Moreover, it is the cooling technology that most impacts the ocean, the protection of which is the council's main charge. So we will follow up certainly with written comments if you would like, kind of fleshing out some of the proposals that I've listed here today. I strongly encourage the council to pass a resolution. I think it's a great idea, and I really applaud you for even bringing this to the table. But today you can go a long way toward restoring California to its rightful place as a leader in balancing environmental protection and economics. And I urge you to pass the resolution, but a modified form of it. Thank you. So,
thanks. Kaya Freo, followed by Mark Thiessen.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, council members, thank you. My name is Kaya Freeman. I'm the Central Coast Regional Manager for the Surfrider Foundation. As you know, Surfrider Foundation is a grassroots organization of 50,000 members, all dedicated to the restoration and protection of the coast and ocean. Thank you for this opportunity to address this issue. Hopefully, you've received numerous emails from concerned citizens over the past week. We think this response, given the short turnaround time, is a strong indication of the public's insistence on the greatest possible protection of our living marine resources. Together with other polling data like that from the Public Policy Institute of California, it is the public will to protect our coast and ocean. We applaud the resolution passed this week by the State Lands Commission to impose very strict standards on cooling technology before reissuing leases for coastal generators. Today we expect you will do the same given your mission statement. Once through cooling is unnecessarily destructive to our coast and ocean, adding unnecessary stress on healthy marine ecosystems, our fisheries, and our coastal communities. The evidence is in, and it's time to take action. We urge you to remove from your resolution any ambiguous language suggesting the impacts of this outdated practice are other than significant. The destruction of marine life from once through cooling has been clear since the passage of the Clean Water Act. After more than 30 years, the industry continues to avoid transition to improved cooling technology. Their message is clear. They have no intention of meeting the performance standards in the new 316B rule. which means no reduction in marine life mortality, but just continued reliance on the loopholes. Unfortunately, the recently passed federal regulation on cooling water intakes includes loopholes big enough to drive a nuclear power plant through. Californians have consistently supported strong protection of our coasts and oceans, as reflected in progressive state laws like the Marine Life Protection Act, the Marine Life Management Act, and the Coastal Act. We recommend an amendment to this resolution before you that sends a clear message to the State Water Resources Control Board. California rejects the loopholes in the federal rule and insists on strict compliance with the performance standards. U.S. EPA has made it abundantly clear that states have this authority to strengthen the federal rule, and in fact, they expect it. One quick note on ocean desal. A strong resolution on once through cooling will not prohibit reasonable and responsible desalination, but it will encourage practices that do not rely on the further destruction of marine life. There is a right way and a wrong way to do desalination. There are already millions of dollars available through Prop 50 to advance the use of desalination, and the state should be investing much of that money in researching and testing new technologies for seawater intakes. It is premature and unsound public policy to piggyback desal facilities on antiquated ones through cooling systems, which are past due for upgrades. Thank you for your careful consideration of these comments and this resolution before you. We hope this resolution reflects the public's will and not only encourages but strongly recommends the state protect and restore what we have left. Thank you.
Mark Thiessen, followed by Bill Powers.
Chairman Christman, members of the council, my name is Mark Thiessen with the Gualco Group. We represent the California Council for Environmental and Economic Balance. Amongst SEED members are nine generators who would obviously be impacted by this resolution. The message I want to leave with you was really made by the six previous speakers, although they didn't state it specifically. The nature of their comments clearly left you with the impression that nobody is endorsing the resolution that's before you, and they're all seeking various modifications to it. Obviously, some want it strengthened, others want clarifications. And that would be SEEB's request, indeed, because it was unveiled on Tuesday and we're all commenting on it on Thursday. SEEB's members don't have a position, per se. They simply haven't had the opportunity to thoroughly vet it and would like this council to defer action on this resolution to give them the opportunity to thoroughly vet it internally and with staff so we could have the opportunity to comment on perhaps a revised resolution at a future meeting. In the comments with regard to the strategic plan, there were nothing but compliments about there was an inclusive process and an open and transparent process and extensive involvement of stakeholders, and that's what we would request here as well. And I think the proponents of the resolution likewise would have that request that opportunity as well.
Do you have any initial comments at all?
Well, we do have some initial comments, and that is with we do have some concerns with regard to the time period for the feasibility study.
What would be a good time frame?
Well, that's we have various opinions internally here. Everybody's agreed that 6 months is too short a time.
Okay.
But we don't know what a reasonable time period would be. There's also concerns about the cost of that. There are concerns about whether or not the wording of the resolution would indeed offer the opportunity for those impacted by it to have all of the involvement that's necessary to, you know, arrive at a proper decision here. Those are some of the issues that we'd like to discuss internally and then share with staff and then be able to comment on perhaps a revised resolution. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Mark, thank you. Bill Powers, followed by Linda Sheehan.
Can I just add, Mr. Powers, who just spoke?
No, Mr. Powers is right here. Yeah.
Previous speaker.
Mark Thiessen.
Mr. Thiessen, your comments would have much more credibility if you could give us some time frame to hear people say, well, this isn't perfect, so we'd like to postpone it, is not very satisfactory to me when you're asked how long do you need when you're not quite sure. It's not very persuasive.
That's fair, Mr. Wesley. What I'd like to do is then, since we represent the nine generators that are affected by the resolution, I'd like to give those who are in the audience who are members of CEVS the opportunity to answer your question directly rather than speak for them.
Fair enough.
Powers?
Thank you for this opportunity to speak this morning. My name is Bill Powers, Powers Engineering, speaking on behalf of my client, California Coastal Alliance, and I would like to underscore that the California Coastal Alliance does want to see the resolution passed today with the amendments, but passed today. And I prepared a fact sheet for my client, which hopefully has been passed out, and what I'd like to do is just spend a couple of minutes reviewing the highlights of that fact sheet. Fundamentally, you've got three options to get a verifiable 90 to 95% reduction in once-through cooling impacts. Either a retrofit to closed-cycle wet cooling, wet towers, a replacement with highly efficient gas turbine combined cycle plants, which is a stated priority in the state's energy action plan, or a retirement. These units average 30 to 50 years old. They're already at or beyond their original design lifetime. The owners are going to have to make a decision sometime soon on what the next step is. The nuclear plants are a very big issue for once-through cooling. They currently, based on the 2004 data, account for about 60% of the seawater used in once-through cooling systems. They must be retrofit to wet towers for this to be an effective resolution. The good news is that wet tower retrofits have already been done on a half a dozen plants in the United States, both steam plants and on one nuclear plant. And the lessons learned from those retrofits are that the retrofits have been relatively simple, they've been cost-effective, much simpler and much less costly than the planned steam generator replacements at the San Onofre and Diablo Canyon nuclear plants. And it's important to understand that basically you've got an intake pipe and a discharge pipe at these plants, and instead of being connected to the ocean, they're being rerouted to a cooling tower. It is a fundamentally very simple process. Wet tower retrofits will not impact plant reliability. The actual retrofits have not required extended outages for those where we have some detailed information.
But I am not okay with
California's
that.
Coastal steam plants have low usage rates, ample downtime during the non-summer period for retrofit tie-in. Nuclear plants periodically go through a 1 to 2 month refueling outage, another opportunity to tie in. And again, both of our nuclear plants are currently have planned steam generator replacements, which will keep them down for an extended period of time. That would be an excellent time to do a wet cooling retrofit. I'd like to touch on a few of the environmental issues. Efficiency and air emissions have come up as mentioned often by industry as a negative for these types of retrofits. A wet tower retrofit on these units would reduce efficiency by 1%, 1.5%, not the 10%. Typically cited by industry. We slowly are seeing replacement with combined cycle plants of these coastal units, and as more of these units are incorporated into the system, the net result on the population as a whole will be lower air emissions and more efficiency of those coastal units. The CEC, in a report, their presentation they gave back in December, indicated that there's very little difference between a new combined cycle project that's once through cooled, wet cooled, or dry cooled. Golden opportunity to eliminate once-through cooling simply by modernization of the fleet. Cooling tower water supply, yes, recycled cooling is the preferred fluid, but you can also use seawater for cooling. We have a number of plants in the United States, nuclear and steam, that use seawater for cooling. Operators reported no problems. That seawater could be used to supplement reclaimed water, or it could be used alone as the cooling medium. Visible plumes. It's standard practice in California in urban areas to use plume-abated cooling towers. Plumes should not be an issue on these retrofits. Space availability. It does appear that there's adequate space at both Diablo Canyon and San Onofre for cooling towers based on a review of aerial photographs. Touching on the desalination issue, many of the coastal steam plants are considering desalination. if you have room for a desalination plant, you have room for cooling towers. You might not have room for both, but you've definitely got room for cooling towers. What are other states and regions doing? New York was mentioned. They have required or recommended that a 2,000-megawatt nuclear plant be retrofit, the Indian Point plant, to wet towers. EPA Region 1 Boston has required that a 1,600-megawatt steam plant retrofit to wet towers as well. California won't be out in front by a resolution that pushes generators to not use ones through cooling. In conclusion, wet tower retrofits are a proven option to achieve a verifiable 90 to 95% impact reduction, which is the objective of the resolution. So I do encourage you to pass the resolution with the amendments.
Great, Bill.
Thank you.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Linda Sheehan, followed by Dana Palmer. Linda?
Good morning, Chair Christman and members of the Council. Linda Sheehan, Executive Director of California Coastkeeper Alliance. I welcome the opportunity to clarify the position of the groups who have signed the letter that's before you and who are speaking before you today in saying that we welcome and support the resolution that's before you and ask that you pass it today. We suggest the recommended amendments that are before you for purposes of implementation. We think they would aid significantly in the implementation of the resolution before you. But again, the Clean Water Act, which includes 316B, was passed in 1972, and we're finally talking about actually implementing it in 2006. So I think it's time to pass the resolution. The State Water Board, as you know, is in the process of developing its own recommendations for implementing both state and federal law with respect to this issue. And again, that's another reason why this resolution passed today would be extremely timely. They're thinking about coming out with a draft this summer. The June meeting would probably be too late to influence that. There is a significant role for the Ocean Protection Council, not only in coordinating the State Water Board's work, but also other agencies' work as well. Again, we thank the Ocean Protection Council for considering this role and refer you to the coordination piece of your resolution. We didn't offer suggested edits to that, but we would like to comment with respect to coordination that obviously State Lands did a marvelous job approving a resolution the other day and highlighting their own role. Department of Fish and Game, for example, is trying to implement HCPs and MOUs at Myron's Contra Costa facility in the Delta and having somewhat of a difficult time being able to do that. The support of a coordinating committee would certainly aid the Department of Fish and Game and other agencies in being able to do their job. In a letter to the State Lands Commission, we also recommended that State Lands look again at the lease fees that are being charged, which have not been looked at in a while. For example, Diablo Canyon pays $20 a year in lease fees. You know, I have $20. I would love to lease something for that. I don't think I can. I can't buy lunch with that. We can't get comprehensive monitoring. We can't get adequate staff oversight. And certainly we can't even begin to recompense the people of the state for the enormous use of public resources that are ongoing with respect to the use of these facilities on $20 a year. We should, while we are phasing in expeditiously alternatives to this destructive technology, we should consider fees that are appropriate to recompense the public. And we did suggest in our letter that a dedicated fund be set up that the Ocean Protection Council perhaps could use in part for marine and coastal initiatives, and we do think that that would be appropriate while the ocean, once the cooling systems are phased out. So in conclusion, we would like to recommend the amendments before you. We think in particular the six-month study could be done expeditiously with the amendments that are before you. We think costs are inappropriate with the Clean Water Act, which discourages use of costs except when an alternative is just physically infeasible, and that's certainly something a six-month study could identify. Environmental review should be saved for the CEQA analysis. We think the focus of a six-month study could be doable within the time frame allotted and help the State Water Board as it moves forward in its regulations. And that's why we suggested those amendments. But we do want you to pass a resolution today, particularly, again, as we celebrate Earth Day and we see a lot of young people in the audience and around Cali, PA, they appreciate your stewardship of our ocean resources, and I think they, too, would like to see a resolution that celebrates Earth Day and your stewardship passed today. Thank you.
Thanks.
Linda, thank you for your persuasive testimony today as well as earlier in the week at the State Lands Commission. You were an important part to leading us, helped lead us to do the right thing. You made today, I thought, just now, a particularly important point, and I just wanted to rewind and ask you to say it again, and that is why you believe it's so important that we act today as opposed to waiting till the next meeting in June. Could you repeat that?
Well, I think that we should act today. There are a number of reasons we should act today. One, we've waited 24 years. No, gosh, I can't do my math now. It's 1972. Gosh, 34 years since the Clean Water Act was passed. And I think waiting any longer doesn't make any sense. We have, as Secretary Christman said, an enormous amount of information before us. We can easily move forward and collect and use that information today. If we wait till June, the State Water Board will have prepared its draft. I think that the support of the Ocean Protection Council will significantly aid the State Water Board in preparing a comprehensive and useful draft proposal to put before the public. And then finally, we see, for example, the Delta crash that's going on. The pumps at the two facilities that Myrant owns in the Delta can withdraw 75% of the water that the Tracy pumps withdraw to irrigate the San Joaquin Valley. That's an incredible statistic, and we have no information on what's going on at those plants. It's really a shame if we don't pass something today and get moving.
Thank you, Ms. Sheehan.
Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Dana Palmer, followed by Robert Yamada.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the council. My name is Dana Palmer, and I'm the staff attorney at Santa Monica Baykeeper. Let me just echo Linda's comments just now. We really want a resolution passed today with some very common sense and easy amendments. Thanks for the opportunity to be here today. The environmental community appreciates this council taking up the important and complex issue of once-through cooling. We believe that addressing this issue is integral to achieving the numerous goals specified by the legislature in the California Ocean Protection Act and the governor in his ambitious Ocean Action Plan. This council will not be able to fully achieve its goals without successfully tackling once-through cooling. That is why we're pleased to see the presence of once-through cooling in your draft five-year strategic plan and the council's anticipated continuing role on the subject. As the controller mentioned this morning, today we are the beneficiaries of the bold actions taken by our predecessors. Without these actions, our air would be dirtier, our land would be more polluted, and our terrestrial resources would be further expended. Despite various legislation passed through the years, however, we have not seen similar benefits to our marine resources. These are the very conditions that prompted the landmark Ocean Protection Act and the Governor's Action Plan. Both documents call for vision and leadership. Two qualities that are lacking in today's draft resolution, or at least lacking to the maximum here. While the legislature and the governor plead for fortitude, today's resolution does not deliver. This is in stark contrast to the controller's actions this past Monday, where the State Lands Commission showed exceptional leadership on once-through cooling in its own resolution. Today, the council should show the same leadership and vision exhibited by the controller and the State Lands Commission. In fact, given the council's clear mandate, its actions should speak even louder. The chief question before the council should be, what principles justify not phasing out once through cooling? The best science tells us the impacts are significant. Real-life examples show us alternative technology is available and workable. Power plant economics demonstrates that the worst of this that the cost of this technology is a fraction of the cost of running a plant over 30 years. Thus, it is a little frustrating that today's resolution is more process-oriented than action-oriented. The two most glaring omissions in the draft resolution are these. First, the resolution does not call for a phase-out of once-through cooling, as the gentleman from the Coastal Commission stated. And the resolution does not call on the Energy Commission to require once-through cooled plants to adopt alternative cooling technologies when repowering. That's a simple common sense step, and it makes perfect sense in this resolution. The two workshops held by the State Water Board in the past 12 months and the reports issued by the Energy Commission in the past year, combined with the hundreds of pages in the record for the federal EPA rule, plus the precautionary approach referenced by Assistant Secretary Baird this morning, these all provide ample reasons to adopt these actions and this resolution today. Putting this aside, we want to compliment staff for processing this complex issue in a short amount of time with limited resources. We do appreciate it. We especially appreciate the draft resolution's commitment to require real reductions in entrainment and impingement of 90 to 95%. As with most public policy issues, the devil is and will be in the details if the state is to actually attain these reductions. The staff overseeing implementation of this resolution should be wary of attempts to weaken this provision through the adoption of flimsy baselines. As importantly, we believe that the participation of independent experts, both on the technical review group and in the technical feasibility study, is a requisite for fulfilling the public participation goals of the Ocean Protection Act. And finally, I'd be remiss if I did not mention the less than helpful role played by the Energy Commission, both in this proceeding and the one at the State Lands Commission. At least publicly, representatives of the Energy Commission have not been fully forthcoming with all the data that can inform this debate. This is bad environmental policy. It's bad public policy. It's just bad altogether. This was evident both in the comments of a representative at a state lands stakeholder meeting earlier, I think it was in the past month, and in the subsequent letter sent by the Energy Commission to the State Lands Commission. In short, the Energy Commission provided an abbreviated and biased presentation of data, and we urge this council and staff to demand full disclosure of all pertinent data. Although today's resolution does not go far enough, we are confident that a rigorous review of the topic will demonstrate that an accelerated phase-out is appropriate. The operators of plants using Unser cooling have been on notice for 34 years now that such plants were to come under increased scrutiny and that cooling technology would have to adapt as the world evolved. While practically every other industrial sector has moved on from their own World War II technology standards, a select few coastal plants have taken a free ride on California seawater. In light of the restructuring of California's electricity sector, these plants should compete on the same level playing field that 100 other plants do, about 100 other. And given that our marine resources are routinely assaulted by an array of other threats, including the more difficult and expensive issue of urban runoff, phasing out once they're cooling is a common sense measure that will pay near-term dividends. I urge you to pass this resolution today, albeit in amended form. Do not submit to the delay tactics of the other side. Passing the resolution today will send an important signal to the State Water Board at this critical time. Thanks very much.
Dana, thank you. Appreciate your coming. Robert Yamada, followed by April Wakeman.
Good morning, Chair Christman, honorable council members. My name is Bob Yamada. I'm the Seawater Desalination Program Manager for the San Diego County Water Authority. I'm here today representing public water agencies in Southern California currently engaged in the planning and implementation of ocean desalination as a new water supply for our region in this state. My remarks today are going to focus on desalination, but before I proceed, I'd like to address the draft resolution before you this morning. We appreciate all the hard work of you and your staff that has been put into this complex issue, and because of the timing, we haven't had a chance to fully review the resolution or the amendments that have been proposed this morning. But I can tell you that we are pleased with certain provisions of the resolution, including its support for the ongoing 316B process and its call for interagency coordination at the state level. I'd like to turn my remarks over to the issue of seawater desalination, because there's been a lot of discussion on desalination in this venue and other venues where the discussion of once through cooling has occurred. Let me provide you with just a bit of context first. Ocean desalination is an integral component of Southern California's long-term strategy for water supplies. Key state water supply planning documents, including the California Water Plan, the Aqua Blueprint for California Water, and the Metropolitan Water District Integrated Resources Plan, all include desalination as an essential new water supply for California, in particular the South Coast region. I might add that public opinion surveys put the support for ocean desal at 60% to 70% or higher. Desalinated ocean water is a drought-proof local supply that will help to improve the reliability and diversify Southern California's water supply portfolio. That said, there's no silver bullet for water supply reliability. No single water resource, whether it's imported supply or conservation or water recycling or even desalination, holds the answer to sustaining our $800 million economy in Southern California or the thousands and millions of jobs that economy supports. The reliability lies in a diversified supply that includes imported supplies, groundwater, recycling, and even ocean desalination. It is through that reliability that we're going to be able to provide a sustainable water supply for our children and grandchildren and our economy. By 2020, it's anticipated that desalination would provide about 3 to 5% of the water used in the Metropolitan Water District service area. This number is not large, but it reaps enormous benefits, including keeping the region from having to seek additional supplies from the Bay Delta and providing an emergency supply in the event of a catastrophe like an earthquake. Let me address the cost of desalination, because that issue's been raised quite a bit. Ocean water desalination is now cost competitive through the advances in technology that have occurred over the last several years with other new water supplies, whether that be water recycling or some forms of groundwater desalting, other local supplies that we're also looking to develop. And it's true that agencies pursuing desalination are pursuing financial incentives to develop that supply. That said, that doesn't mean that pursuing an incentive means that we're pursuing a less than ready resource. The use of incentives has been employed historically to promote the development of local supplies. For example, the Metropolitan Water District has provided over $200 million in incentives for water recycling and groundwater development, over $234 million for ongoing conservation programs. Incentives like the Metropolitan Seawater Desalination Program incentive will help jumpstart the development of this needed water supply. Let me speak for a minute on the issue of co-location. When it makes sense, co-located ocean water desalination facilities can take advantage of existing water and power infrastructure, thus localizing and minimizing surface coastal impacts and reducing the cost to our ratepayers. While the co-location of a desalination facility may influence future planning for a coastal power station, the market forces driving these power stations, whether the energy market or land values, are orders of magnitude more significant than the influence of a co-located desalination plant. To say otherwise is like the proverbial tail wagging the dog. Each desalination plant proposal with regard to environmental review is going to need to conduct a public and thorough environmental review process of its impacts through the California Environmental Quality Act. There has been much discussion about the use of subsurface intakes for desal. We agree that there are potential benefits to using such technology where it's appropriate. In fact, Long Beach and in Orange County, ongoing feasibility study investigations are looking at the potential costs, benefits, and challenges of using subsurface intakes. However, in many cases, subsurface intakes will not be technically or economically or environmentally feasible. If you look at the surface impacts along the coastline and beaches to beach wells and other facilities, around the world, the vast majority of desalinated ocean water is produced from surface intakes. Subsurface intakes are typically used for smaller facilities, say 10 million gallons a day or less, located on islands with volcanic or coral formations where there is a high transmissivity in the ground. Larger facilities, such as the one the Water Authority is looking at, are desirable due to the economies of scale, are virtually all surface intake. And rather than, and one of the other speakers referenced a right and a wrong way to do desal, rather than a right or a wrong way to do desal, I think there's an appropriate way to do desal at each site that takes into account the marine and coastal environmental impacts, the technical feasibility, and the cost. So finally, in closing, I'd like to say on behalf of the public water agencies in Southern California that we look forward to working with the council in a cooperative manner to develop environmentally sensitive and cost-effective desalination facilities that will provide needed fresh water to our state. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert. April Wakeman, followed by Angela Herron.
Good morning, Secretary Christman, members of the council. My name is April Wakeman. I'm the attorney for United Anglers of Southern California, representing approximately 50,000 recreational anglers. We also feel we're the voice of approximately 2.2 million licensed fishermen in California. That, of course, doesn't include children and people that somehow don't buy licenses. We support the resolution urging implementation of protective controls, formation of the technical regional group, the review group, interagency coordinating committee, and the 6-month study. what we would like to add, however, that should alternative technology not be feasible, and we support the alternative technology, but in some cases it just may not be feasible, that mitigation is a reasonable alternative. However, when considering mitigation, it must relate to the harm involved, and what we've seen is mitigation that does not take into consideration the stakeholders impacted by the issue, particularly once through cooling, obviously affects the mortality of marine organisms. And what we urge is that in considering mitigation for once through cooling, that one considers enhanced habitat for fish, and that enhanced habitat should obviously include the right to fish, allowing the fish to be killed through impingement, entrainment, thermal effects, and then using the mitigation money to establish no-take marine reserves. Prohibiting us from fishing is simply adding insult to injury. Thank you.
Thank you, April. Sarah Abramson, followed by Warner Chaveau. Oh, did I miss you? Oh, Angela, no? Oh, Angela, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Angela Heron, followed by Sarah. Sorry.
Thanks. That's okay. Good morning. I'm Angela Heron, Programs Manager for the California Coastkeeper Alliance. I would first like to thank the Ocean Protection Council for taking a leadership role on this very important issue. The Alliance supports the resolution on once through cooling and urges the Council to adopt it today, with the few small edits outlined in the joint comment letter dated yesterday, April 19th, that you now have before you, and that were also explained by Ms. Sheehan and my colleagues here this morning. As the resolution acknowledges, once through cooling is an antiquated technology that causes serious and ongoing harm to our coastal environment. The economic value of our marine resources is critically important here in California, where a large portion of our total economic activity is fueled by a healthy coast and ocean. Phasing out once through cooling will help to protect these valuable resources. California citizens continue to express their desire for the highest level of protection of our marine resources, as was recently witnessed by the over 1,500 emails sent to the Council this week urging you to pass a strong resolution regarding the elimination of once through cooling today. In the past, the regulated community has suggested that phasing out cooling would jeopardize the reliability of the state's electrical grid. However, in other states, such as Michigan and South Carolina, both nuclear and steam plants have been cost-effectively retrofit to alternative cooling technologies without harm to their energy supply. California should follow these examples and require alternative cooling technologies that will both protect our resources and the reliability of our energy supply. With respect to the third whereas in the findings, not all of the power plants are essential. Indeed, some are being phased out now. We instead suggest that the Council state its commitment to ensuring the reliability of California's energy supply and note that this commitment is not at odds with also ensuring a healthy environment. In fact, modernization of coastal steam plants with high-efficiency gas turbine combined cycle plants is a stated goal of California's Energy Action Plan. The proposed resolution with the amendments that we suggested will help to advance a much-needed statewide policy to phase out once through cooling. We thank you for taking a leadership role and encourage you to use your unique position to coordinate the various agencies involved with this issue in order to phase out this harmful technology as soon as possible by adopting this resolution today. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. Sarah Abramson, followed by Warner Chaveau.
Good morning. My name is Sarah Abramson, and I'm a staff scientist with Heal the Bay. We thank the Ocean Protection Council and staff for addressing this timely issue by proposing a resolution on once through cooling. We hope that you, as the Ocean Protection Council, charged with employing innovative approaches to protect, manage, and restore California's ocean and coastal ecosystems, demonstrate your leadership today and act in a way that provides the much-needed protection to our ocean and coastal ecosystems from destructive once through cooling technologies. The impacts of once-through cooling are significant and arguably severe. A recent entrainment characterization study conducted at Huntington Beach Generating Station estimates that the plant entrains and subsequently kills 350 million fish larvae each year. Furthermore, in Southern California, power plants south of Point Conception consume up to 30% of the recreational fish caught each year.
This unnecessary destruction to our valuable marine resources must stop. We are pleased that the proposed resolution urges the State Water Board to proceed with a state policy that requires coastal power plants to achieve 90% reduction in entrainment and 95% reduction in impingement at their facilities. However, we are concerned that these percentages will not be realized without setting a specific timeline and comparing the reductions to a scientifically based and appropriate baseline. The combined once-through cooling systems at Haines and Alamitos generating stations cycle all the water in the Alamitos Bay every 5 days. Furthermore, historic impingement studies at Harbor Generating Station document the take of Pacific pompano, a species which is almost never seen today in the coastal waters of Southern California. To protect against continued destruction and ensure that impingement and entrainment reductions are truly attained, we urge the Ocean Protection Council to recommend that these reductions be genuine and not achieved through creative calculations. We also support the idea of convening a technical review group to provide expertise on these matters to the State Water Board, but think that this group should not be limited to review of the power plant's data collection proposals. It is essential that the technical group also review the Los Angeles It's essential that the technical groups also review the studies and impact reductions. The LA Regional Board has already approved many of the data collection proposals for plants in this region, and studies are already underway. Extending the proposed technical review to power plant study analyses and impact reductions will provide the state with comprehensive monitoring related to C-316B. It is also essential that the review panel and studies addressed in Resolve Clauses 2 and 4 be conducted by independent entities to truly provide objective and useful information. Also, in our opposition to once the cooling, we're not claiming that desalination is not a reality for California's future. We recognize that it may be, but desal is not reliant on the once through cooling technologies. Alternatives are available. This resolution will not affect desalination. We urge you to make these improvements and vote on this resolution today. I think the suggested amendments are simple enough and can be discussed and decided upon today at this meeting. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Warner, followed by Tim Hemming.
I'll try to be brief and not repeat what's already been said. We do urge support, however, the staff resolution with the edits urged in the April 19th letter from 8 conservation and fishing organizations. While we agree that more time for public review would have been helpful and preferable, we do urge adoption today. Let's be honest. The pending Water Board meeting that's coming up that's going to deal with this is the real showdown, the main event, the big enchilada. We believe that the suggested edits that are being proposed here will clarify that phasing out antiquated once-through cooling does not threaten California's energy supply or future water supply, and that it urges the Water Board rather than the CEC as the lead for the proposed study. We also applaud the action taken previously this week by the State Lands Commission. Regarding today's resolution, as you well know, California's sport and commercial fisheries have been dealt a series of blows in the past decade due to steep declines in the size and number of key recreational and commercial fisheries such as groundfish and salmon. Existing studies indicate that once-through cooling has significant adverse impacts on the food source for these and other key recreational and commercial fisheries. The Ocean Protection Council is the most broadly representative, high-level state government body representing the public's interest in restoring the health of the ocean. Your voice today will send a strong and unequivocal message to the State Water Board and to the public that it's time to take a cost-effective transition away from antiquated once-through cooling, and that making that transition does not threaten either the economies of power generation or desalinization in California. Thank you.
Thanks, Warner. Appreciate it. Tim Hemming.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the council. My name is Tim Hemming with NRG West Coast. We're the owners of the El Segundo Generating Station and the Encina Power Station. And both of these plants are currently operating today, helping to energize the grid and keep the lights on in Los Angeles area and in San Diego area. NRG strongly supports the mission of the Ocean Protection Council and does its best to contribute to improving the coast and the ocean.
Very good.
A couple of specific examples are a beach cleanup program that we do at El Segundo we call Beauty in the Beach, which we do in conjunction with Heal the Bay. In fact, that program's won accolades from the state legislature, the state senate, the governor, and the local cities, Manhattan Beach and El Segundo. We also support and believe we're ocean stewards by our support in eradicating the invasive algae down in the Agua Hedionda Lagoon down in Carlsbad, which is called the Caulerpa taxifolia. We've been a strong supporter of that eradication effort. So NRG wants to make it clear that we do not oppose this resolution, but we do believe that the resolution, what it says and what it does, should be carefully considered prior to being adopted. I think we've heard from numerous people that there's a need to hear specific suggestions on the resolution. A couple of things I think that should be pointed out are this resolution, the way it's written, it could substantially increase the cost of Phase 2, 3 of 16B at these generating stations. And that's the part about the 90 to 95% reduction in impacts. And it also could conceivably result in the retrofit of once-through cooling to these alternative cooling technologies that we've discussed. Through this feasibility study that's proposed in this resolution, and then when looked at in conjunction with the State Lands Commission resolution that would consider reopening leases if there's a feasible alternative. These are significant decisions that, while they do have the potential to reduce impacts of once-through cooling on the environment, they also would create potential significant adverse impacts to air quality and greenhouse gas emissions. And they also, by impacts to generating power in California and supply of power and the reliability of the electricity grid in California through losing generating capacity at the stations that would be caused by retrofit to alternative cooling. An appropriate engineering study or feasibility study that would potentially conclude if alternative cooling is feasible or not would have to look at a number of things. And rather than go through the list, and we've heard a variety of different opinions on that today, but feasibility is technical feasibility, in summary, economic feasibility, regulatory feasibility. You know, can you even do this and with land use constraints and considerations at these coastal plants? And the environmental consequences of the alternative cooling technology. And I think if we had an 8-hour workshop today, we'd probably hear the full 8 hours of different testimony on the two sides, or probably more than two sides of that coin. But one piece of information I think you need to think about today is that EPA did do this alternative cooling study. They did that over the last 8 years as part of the Phase 2 316B regulation. And just in summary, they concluded in the Federal Register and in the final rule of July 9, 2004, they concluded that Phase 2 316B for existing intake structures would not require alternative cooling. And they concluded that with both wet cooling and dry cooling, that the high retrofit and operating costs are not economically practicable, that in some cases the technology just was not available to be used at these facilities, was not technically feasible, and would have very high energy efficiency impacts. And those energy efficiency impacts result in what I've earlier discussed as air quality impacts and impacts to greenhouse gas emissions, because you'll have to make up for that lost capacity to keep the grid whole and reliable. Earlier you asked for a specific suggestion. I think what I would say is, I think a good example is what happened with the State Lands Commission resolution. We had a proposed resolution in February. It had, I think, the benefit of additional time to be a vastly improved resolution, which was adopted on Monday. It had the time to hear the different sides, the information. This resolution is different than that State Lands resolution. It has different components that need to be, all the information needs to be gathered. So I suggest that you do not adopt this today, that you do have an additional time to consider some of the specific suggestions today on language changes, and that you re-explore this at your next meeting. I think that'll be, you'll have the same result as you had with the State Lands Commission with a vastly improved resolution. So I do appreciate the opportunity to provide our comments and happy to answer questions if there are any.
Tim, thank you for coming. I've got two more cards. The controller has a schedule he's got to meet, and I'm going to ask the last two folks that are going to come up and speak, if you could make it quick, if you could. Julie Malinowski-Ball from LADWP, followed by Meg Brown. Julie?
Hi, thank you. Yes, Julie Malinowski-Ball, representing the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power. I actually wasn't going to speak today. We don't oppose this resolution, but there seems to be a lot of discussion going on about amendments. We would like the opportunity to have a public process, discuss the amendments, and would ask that if you do start considering amendments, that we delay and have the opportunity to discuss it. Thank you.
Thank you. Meg?
Meg Katzen Brown, representing the California Water Association and California American Water Company. Like my colleague, Julie Malinowski-Ball, I was also not planning to testify today. We do think that this resolution is very balanced in its approach, and we're prepared to support the resolution. We do hope that if amendments are considered, like Ms. Ball, that we will be included in the discussion and that the process will be transparent and allow for full participation by all stakeholders. Thank you.
Thanks. Appreciate that. Again, that concludes the public comment period on this really important resolution today. I'll ask staff members or members of the board to make any comments that they have, and I'll make some comments after that.
Terrific. First, I want to thank my colleague, Assemblyman Nava, for joining us and recognize him and, frankly, all of his work on environmental issues. Second, I want to thank everybody for coming here to testify this morning, particularly the students from Stanford. I have to note, you've gotten smarter since I taught there, although that may be a reflection of the fact I was at the business school, not the law school. I'd like to recommend that we act today on this important issue. And I'm going to make a move that we vote on the amendment with all of the on the motion with all the amendments. I believe our oceans are sick. Our fisheries are depleted. Our job is to protect them. I've lived through this issue for the last 6 months. We've worked very closely with industry. We've made a number of compromises, but we finally moved forward something I felt was very important this Monday at the State Lands Commission. Ironically, despite all the compromises we made, despite the fact we postponed our action, industry still wanted more time. And it became clear to me that industry was always going to want more time. And the simple fact is, I am not sure we have more time. And that is why I think we need to move now. And I'd like to move that we pass or adopt the resolution with the amendments submitted by the 8 public commenters that are before us today. And I just want to underscore the notion this is a resolution. This is not a law. This is to provide direction. I think we need to do this in a timely manner. As Ms. Sheehan pointed out, other groups are writing documents as we speak. I think we need to be on record. It's important. People are looking for us to lead, and I think we should.
Thank you. Bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Some of you remember that it was at Senator Keel's direction that last January in Santa Barbara, I suggested this course of action that led to this development of this resolution, and I want to thank the people who worked so hard on it. It's actually a very strong statement. I think the controller's motion is appropriate. I think that the amendments provide better focus to the motion. I specifically think it's important to include the reference to applicable state laws, and I also think it's important to streamline the study, which the controller's motion would do. The controller also just mentioned that this resolution does not direct a regulatory result, and I think that's also important. I heard some testimony from people who were hoping that it would. frankly, I'm not sure that this is the proper entity to direct a regulatory result. I would support that motion. I'm a non-voting member at this, but I would support the intent of that motion. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Pedro, you have anything you'd like to add? I know you came in during the conversation, but you must have a comment, and then...
Thank you. Yeah, I apologize for being late. There were competing interests, and 79 of my colleagues demanded that I be on the floor of the Assembly this morning, and they were persuasive. So, although I missed the discussion, I do have to say this is certainly not my first exposure to this particular issue. I had 8 glorious years on the California Coastal Commission, and from time to time, this particular matter would surface, pardon the pun. And I'm, if I had a vote, woulda, coulda, I would be supporting with a vote the controller's motion. I do think the amendments are important. I think it helps us give a focus, and although it doesn't result in any sort of regulatory changes, I think what it does is help create the boundaries for the discussion. And it's absolutely critical and necessary that we marshal the resources and move this thing in a particular direction that is going to provide some benefit to the public. And I want to thank Mr. Wesley for taking the lead and making that first motion.
Cindy?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have 2 comments on the resolution. On the first resolve clause, looking at the suggested amendments, the amendments would have the Ocean Protection Council resolve to implement Section 316B and more stringent state requirements. And my understanding is that it's the State Water Resources Control Board that actually implements Section 316B. So I would suggest a clarification to that language by saying that the council urges the State Water Resources Control Board to implement Section 316B and more stringent state requirements.
Okay.
That's the first comment. And there's one other comment. On the second resolve clause, looking at the existing language and with the amendment, I met this week with staff of the State Water Resources Control Board. This resolve clause relates to the board's formation of a technical review group, and they are willing to do that. They think that's a good idea. But when you look at the staff memo, it talks about the Ocean Protection Council supporting the Water Board's formation of the technical review group. This language has the council assisting the Water Board. We would suggest, instead of assisting the Water Board, either encouraging or urging the Water Board to form the technical review group. It's a small change requested by State Water Board staff.
And you say that's on the second resolve?
Yes. Where it says further resolves to assist.
Oh, assist.
So we would suggest saying encourages the State Water Board's formation of.
But assist is a more proactive. Okay. All right.
So as the maker of the motion, I'd be happy to accept that fairly minor and straightforward comment as a friendly amendment.
Thank you.
Let me, before I indicate what I'd like to do here, I'd like to make a few comments about what I heard today. I could not agree more that we need to act on this motion. And what I heard today, this issue has been out for quite an extended period of time. Again, I agree with Controller Wesley that this is a resolution. This is a resolution to work together. I'm in agreement with all of the amendments that have been suggested until we get down to the second to the last resolve. And it's probably not enough for me to oppose what we're doing here today, but I have to publicly express some concerns about it, in particular because it suggests that we're in the original resolution we had resolved to fund a 6-month study in conjunction with the California Energy Commission and other interested parties.
That is really the only part of this that I, of these amendments that I disagree with. I quite frankly think the Energy Commission has got to be a part of this. What I heard out here today is a fear on a lot of people's part about the need for more full information as we begin to focus on this. I understand the view is that the information is already there. It's been gathered. We know the impacts. But our commitment here is to take a look at what's actually on the ground, the power plants that are there now, and recognizing that we have got to phase out this one-through cooling over time. We've got to look at each one of the power plants and assess each one on an individual basis. So if I end up supporting this resolution, I'm going to, the Energy Commission will be involved in this. They will be involved in this process and will, from a resources agency perspective, be working very closely with the State Water Board and other entities on this. Why the drafters of this amendment felt it was important to delete a reference to the Energy Commission in this, I don't know. I guess I could probably ask, but right now it's probably not necessary. The other wording I can live with in the resolution, but just know that the Energy Commission will be involved in this. We're going to encourage the Energy Commission and our relevant entities in the resources agency to work with the State Water Resources Control Board. Any comments, Mr. Wesley?
I want to thank the Secretary for his support of the motion as mm-hmm. stated, and would love to move to a vote if we could.
Okay. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you. Really good discussion today. I would encourage the industry folks that are here today, again, recognizing that this is a resolution. What I want to do is I want to hear from you. We want to hear from you folks. We want to hear your concerns. We want to make sure that your concerns are amplified in the work that we do. We'll be putting together a working team that will include the Energy Commission. That will include representatives from the State Water Board and all of you. So let's work together on this as we begin to really take a close look at this once through cooling issue and deal with it on a proactive basis. Okay, let's adjourn for a couple 3 minutes and then we'll reconvene. Okay.
Thank you, everybody, for coming this morning.